You're now listening to the Talking Pictures Podcast, broadcasting from sunny Orange County, California. Filmmaker, journalist, and film historian, Paul Booth.
Aloha and welcome to Talking Pictures. I'm your host, Paul Booth. It is always my great pleasure to talk about movies, see what's out there on the festival circuit, talk about what's out there in theaters, Redbox, Netflix, anything goes. Today we're going to have a special guest. Her name is Lulu Wang. She's a film director. Although Lulu has won some great achievements here that we're going to discuss, really awesome things she's done and is doing. We're here today to discuss her short film that's headed to the Palm Springs International Short Fest and Film Market, which is coming up here June 16th to the 22nd. And we're going to be heading out there as Talking Pictures as a credentialed media show to cover some of the films and meet filmmakers and our good friend Anna Musso, who's going to be out there with her film Run Fast. We're going to be out there to support that. She's been a past podcast guest. Aloha, welcome. Are you with us, Lulu?
Yeah. Hi, Paul.
Oh, thank you so much for calling. We appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah. No problem. Anytime. We love having filmmakers on, film historian, crew. Anybody that loves movies is welcome on the show. So we're very happy to have met you, especially through the, I might pronounce it wrong. Is it Film Fatales?
Film Fatale, yeah.
Okay, Film Fatale. Okay, yeah, I figured I'd pronounce it wrong. Especially to meet you through that, and of course now how social media, how you can meet people on Facebook and through email. I think it's really, really cool. It used to kind of feel awkward, but I've met so many great people that way. So first of all, we wanted to say congratulations. As I go into your bio here, this is very prestigious that you got to, you were awarded the Roger and Chaz Ebert Directing Fellowship at the 2014 Film Independent Spirit Awards.
Yeah.
You recently wrote and directed your first narrative feature, Posthumous, a love story set in Berlin. I would love to see that because I have some family members from Berlin, and it's always, I actually have a family member who grew up in East Berlin.
Wow.
So it's very interesting to hear what life was like thinking you'd never see the other side of a wall.
Yeah.
I've always told him he should make that into a film, but he's not a filmmaker, unfortunately. And then you were born in Beijing, raised in Miami, where you attended New World School of Arts as a classically trained concert pianist. What was that like?
Well, you know, I'm Asian, so of course we had to play the piano. So I grew up playing piano. You know, my mom always wanted to play the piano. She never had the opportunity. So even when we came to the U.S. In 1989, you know, we didn't have a lot of money. We didn't have any money, really. And it was top priority for my mother was for me to continue practicing piano. So she would take me after work every single day to a community church that, you know, we got introduced to, and they gave us a key and let me play the piano there until we had enough money to buy a piano. So, you know, I think it gave me a lot of discipline. So that was really good. And obviously, you know, growing up with music and rhythm kind of just, you know, incorporated in your being, it definitely affects my editing, you know, when I'm working with an editor or just in general with the pacing and rhythm of a film. I think that there's influence there.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say with music, it made me think of a guest we had on a few months back where she's, her favorite thing to do is play piano, but she's known as a television and film actress, and she's actually been around for a couple of decades. But when you see her on stage, she's just like, her passion feels like the room's going to explode. And it was really interesting because it was like you're saying, piano, everything else you do lends you her timing. So it's like piano gives her timing with other actors to know when to hit something or when not to hit something, to know your mark. So I'm glad that you brought that up with editing, because I was going to say it probably gave you a great sense, and it probably gives you a great sense in the editing room. And then from Miami, from Miami, your bio heads to Boston College, where you have a bachelor's in literature and music. So you're coming at films from which how they should be come at, but it, some of us, it takes us so long for us to learn this that we should know books and music and other subjects, not just movies. And you're 2014. Oh, go ahead. And is, I mean, is there anything you'd like to say to, I don't want to say younger filmmakers because I don't want to get into age. I never like doing that. I think we're all just filmmakers. But what could you say about that? Like, really, is there something specifically where, that you would see wouldn't be in your work if you weren't, if you didn't have a bachelor's in literaturism and books?
Well, you know, I think everybody's different. You, nowadays, it's like my brother, he just dropped out of college to become a chef, right? So I think everybody has their own path, and you don't, you know, maybe college helps you, maybe it doesn't. Maybe getting a degree in something helps, maybe it doesn't. Ultimately, it's just about life experience and taking you on whatever path you're meant to be on. But, you know, I will say that I was really, I didn't know, I guess I never thought about film realistically because I grew up in a, you know, and we've heard it a million times, a very, you know, immigrant family, you know, go do something logical and, you know, get a stable job. And so I never really, even though my mother brought me up playing the piano and she herself is a writer and she was an editor in Beijing of the Literary Gazette there, she never expected me to be in the arts. And so I didn't grow up with a Super 8 film camera and, you know, running around. I didn't actually see a lot of American films because I didn't speak English when I first got here and I had to learn English and everything. And so it wasn't in my cultural background growing up. And so I had to discover a lot of that for myself. And in college, when I took a film class for the first time, I was pretty intimidated. It was a lot of, it was, you know, primarily boys. And I felt like they had all had this huge history with film and knowledge and history and filmmaking. And so it was definitely intimidating. And I guess I would just say to people that it doesn't matter really what your background is, you know, but if you, if it's something that you love, then there's always time to learn.
That's very well put. And it makes me think of, and I don't like doing this when people like quote Martin Scorsese or Spielberg, but there's something that he said about being, and that he's speaking about himself. Again, this is not speaking of any other cultures, but he was saying how his parents didn't speak a lot of English, being an Italian immigrant. And so the reason why he's so into movies and why he still to this day has hard time reading books is because it was so much easier to learn things by just watching a movie. So his parents would watch movies or take him to movies because it wasn't like you had to sit down, figure out when you were going to find 8 hours to finish one story. You could give 90 minutes, learn everything you wanted to learn out of that story, whether it was about violence or a theme about love. And it was really interesting when he said that, because that's kind of where I'm the reverse of what you were saying, where like movies are everything in my family. It's always like, what's coming out Friday? What's playing? What's on Netflix? And it's more from that my parents were from the same similar background, that there wasn't like, it was like being in America, that was the thing, was movies. It wasn't like go read books. It was like, what's playing at the cinema, that's more entertaining. So I'm really happy to have this diverse background that you have here on in your bio, so we can examine your film touch and of course discuss some other things. The one thing I'd be really interested in, and if you don't want to discuss it, that's fine, is what was it like to be awarded something with Mr. Ebert's name on it?
Oh, well, I think it was actually the first year when they gave it to me after he passed away. And was it the first year? I believe so, yeah. It was a real honor. I mean, it's pretty incredible that they support this. And I think it's really important that it helped me a lot last year. It was just sort of like it fell from the sky. I was very grateful. And I don't know. I don't know what else to say. I was very honored and grateful. And, you know, regardless of his name or his wife, I mean, just the fact that they do this for filmmakers is...
Oh, right. No, for the importance of working with film as a whole, and I think a lot of filmmakers out there would know, or people, also the show is not just for filmmakers, it's for people that want to learn about film or just listen to filmmakers. You know, film can sometimes be a very self-centered business or a very self-centered art form, and that was one of the reasons why we wanted to start the show, was because we didn't want to be like that. We wanted to hear what everyone else was thinking and what everyone else was up to, because it's like, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, for Roger Ebert, it's to go beyond, you know, his own work and to support filmmakers. It's a whole legacy that he's creating. It's not just, you know, it's what you're saying. It's to give back to the community and to, because there's a lot of stories, I think, that, you know, people don't, if you're not giving them the opportunities, a lot of different voices, a lot of artists, a lot of stories that aren't being told. And so I think, it's very important to support those people.
Yeah, that was one of the best things. Everyone, I always do this, and I'm sorry that I forgot before you came on, Lulu. My Netflix recommendation for the week, I was going to say watch Life Itself, the Roger Ebert documentary that came out on CNN. And you guys are actually lucky if you check it out on Netflix now. It's about 15 minutes longer, and it has some a lot of stuff that they didn't go into in the CNN version that was for television. So. You guys are lucky to have that longer version on Netflix. Check that out. Like Lulu said, it is about the importance of creating a legacy for film and not just something where when they speak of you, they talk about your best book or your best film or show. Now, in getting into discussing Touch, of course, we first of all wanted to say a personal congratulations on getting into the Palm Springs International Short Fest and Film Market.
Thank you.
And is this, will this be the premiere of the film?
Yes, this is the world premiere.
Okay, congratulations on that. For those of you that don't know, Palm Springs Short Fest, or International Short Fest and Film Market, is actually such a big short film festival that they separated from the one that you usually hear about in January, that they only have features, and the one that you're usually hearing about them giving DiCaprio or Clooney or Scorsese or somebody an award. And they have this short film festival, and just to show you how great and prestigious this festival is, so we can show our appreciation towards the filmmakers that come on to discuss it. It's taken like 4 years for me to get media credentials to it, and it's not because they're snobby. It's just because they always have really great films. So this is the first year that we're going to be covering it as a show. So we were very thankful to find some filmmakers in advance. We wanted to say thank you to them for that, for sharing their films. I'm going to go into the synopsis here. Again, the film is called Touch. It's a drama, 2015 USA color. Running time is 15 minutes. For those of you that have joined us at any time, we're here talking with film director Lulu Wang. Okay, the synopsis. An elderly Chinese immigrant's cultural ignorance gets him in irreversible trouble when he touches a young American boy in a public restroom. Despite his harmless intentions, he struggles with his son and the legal system to make the context of his touch understood. Based on a true story, Touch deals with the cultural gap between father and son, while it also examines the capacity for sensitivity across major cultural boundaries in the American judicial system. My first question would be, how did you take what sounds like a just superb 2-hour story and fit it into 15 minutes?
That's
a feature synopsis to me right there. That makes me think of, I'm thinking of how I've been on the edge of my seat for 45 minutes of what the judge is going to do or what the family's going to do. But sorry, go ahead.
I always thought of it as a short film because my father works as a translator. He used to be a diplomat and now he works a lot for the State Department. As a translator, and this was one of the cases that he worked on, and he, you know, has actually come across several cases that are quite similar to this story, you know, to varying degrees, and as well as other stories about cultural misunderstanding. So I always thought as either as a short or as a feature, but that was a compilation of, you know, a number of short story, like shortcuts or something like that. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess why did I see it as a short, though? And I wrote it as a short because it's really just this very poignant moment. And I guess you could go deeper into developing it into a feature, but it would be quite difficult. I'm not sure, you know, how many people would be wanting to finance a film about an elderly Chinese immigrant and sort of this issue. But it was fascinating to me because, I think we just take it for granted in America, if you know, the things that are right and wrong. And when you travel or when you're from other places, you know, the standards are different. Everybody is different. I don't know. Maybe ask me a question. So, because I'm like,
well,
I don't know
what else really, I like
it.
What you're saying. I don't want to sound weird or gross here, but on Mother's Day, I was at a theme park here in California, and now that you're mentioning this, I did kind of have a moment in the restroom where the you know, men, when we go to the bathroom, it's like, God forbid, we go to the bathroom next to each other. And I'm really not meaning to sound gross, or I'm going along with the point of the movie. And so there's just this thing where, like, we don't even want to stand next to each other in the bathroom. I mean, you always look for a way to not be standing to someone, even if it's just that one side is empty if you're at a baseball game. So this was a really, when I opened up this synopsis today, I thought, first of all, what an interesting synopsis, because A, it goes right across the thing we were talking about of male-female filmmaker. This is obviously something where we could say men should know more about a men's bathroom than a female's. But then also the idea of this harmless intention that something that I can just tell in reading this synopsis is captured so well, just in putting the thought into it of, like I said, we don't even want to bump into another person when we're in the bathroom. So there is this weird thing.
Yeah, I think we live in this country is pretty puritanical when it comes to a lot of things, but particularly when it comes to sex and identity. And, you know, there's a lot of, for example, I have a friend who's a teacher in Europe, and she used to teach. She's from the States, and she used to teach in America. And when she went to Europe, when she first started teaching kindergarten there, the parents had a meeting with her, and they said, you know, there's a problem. And she said, oh, what's wrong? And they said, how come you don't touch our children? You know, like, they spend so much of the day with you and you don't touch them. And, you know, that negatively affects them because they need affection. They need physical affection. And, you know, we aren't around and you're the only person they're around all day, and you don't give them any physical affection. And that's going to, you know, create psychological problems or whatever. And she was so shocked. She's like, wait a second, you want me to touch your children? Because in America, there were all of these laws and rules, and I think they're becoming more and more extreme to not touch children. And I don't know if you saw The Hunt, which got nominated for an Oscar last year, but that dealt with a lot of similar, you know, about a man who was wrongly accused of child molestation, and he's a teacher. And so, you know, you create this fear in the society. So I guess that's
I mean, it's interesting that you say that, because I remember when I was growing up, maybe between the ages of 5 and 10, my mother was a preschool teacher. So she was constantly having to deal with that, you know, those state laws and that walking the line, and if the parent complained about something, or would the school get shut down, or so there was a big thing. There had been a thing in Los Angeles. I always put it out of my brain because it's so disgusting, but there had been this preschool in Los Angeles where they were molesting kids all the time. So the moment that happened, it was like McMartin, or I don't even like thinking about it, And once that happened, it was like in Santa Monica or something. Then it was like every school was afraid to even like hug kids goodbye.
Right.
Because they
exactly.
were just thinking of like how this craziness, right? So
Exactly.
It's interesting when you're saying with the European culture, they're very, my friends from Germany, I mean, they find it so weird here how everything is so stringent.
Right. And The Hunt was a Danish film. So, but, you know, they approached the topic also that, you know, once you sort of condemn somebody with this label, right, of sex molester, child molester, it never goes away. And
right.
that's something that in this culture we don't talk about enough because it's this stigma and we just say this person's a pedophile and it's like I heard somebody told me like in jail, or I guess this is a popular knowledge, that in jail, in prison, apparently like if you go in as a child molester, as a pedophile, people, the other prisoners take that as worse than being like a serial killer.
Yes, I heard that too.
Right. And so I was trying to find ways to integrate that in the story, but that was the reality of like, okay, if he basically in the film, he has two options. One option is to plead guilty and take the plea bargain, in which case he doesn't do any jail time, but he would be kept some probation and he would be a registered sex offender. The other option would be to plead not guilty and go in front of a jury and go to trial. And, you know, part of the fear is that, well, if you get convicted, if you have an unsympathetic jury and you get convicted and you go to jail, you know, forget how long you go there for. What could happen to you in jail as a sex offender is frightening. And so do you really want to take that risk? But then if you don't take that risk, then you're basically pleading guilty. And so the film deals with him and his relationship with his son, where the son is trying to find justice and to say, no, it's about the principle. My father is not a sex offender. I don't want my father to be known everywhere in the community as a sex offender. And we have to right this, you know, misunderstanding. But there's so little room in this culture and in the legal system to really understand. And so,
right, because you get into the psychology of, I know that it's everyone on the planet, but you also get into, like you're saying, an unsympathetic jury, but you're also getting into, and this applies to the film, and I'm sure it's written into the characters. Again, The Hunt has an 8.3 on IMDb. There's very few films that have over an 8. So, make sure you guys find that. But the way you have a definitive change on certain topics once you have a child. I know once all my friends had kids, they had a totally different outlook on laws like this or what a teacher does or what someone says, or all of a sudden, like, you know, how you were saying being conservative about your speech, like all of a sudden you can't say the F word. And it's like, you know, I've heard you say the F word 350 times in a day. And now, because you have a kid that doesn't even understand what anyone's saying yet, we can't say the F word anymore. So, I mean, I understand why it shouldn't be like F this and F that in front of kids, but it's that weird dynamic that just changes. So the characters have, and you don't have time to really write, well, now he had a kid, so now he's going to think differently about this. And you kind of have to put that in the subtext as the writer and the director, right? And find your own way to say that.
Yeah.
So,
absolutely, yeah.
Basically your main inspiration? Oh, go ahead, sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, you know, and of course, we have to be protective of the children. I just think culturally there's a very different approach, and I have a funny story, which is that when I was a kid, we had a neighbor who was definitely some kind of a molester. I don't know if he quite did anything, but one time my friend and I, you know, he would always pick us up in the pool and be inappropriate and touchy, and we would never say anything to anyone. But then one day he closed the door and, you know, he called us in and said, oh, I want to show you some comic book or some, you know, typical thing like that. And he locked the door behind us and pulled and said, you know, I'll show you mine if you show me yours. And he pulled his pants down and we freaked out and we just ran and we, you know, unlocked the door and ran out. And I went and I told my mom, And I told her, and my mom's reaction was like, oh yeah, he's creepy. Just stay away from him. And that was kind of it, you know. She was just like, yeah, that's creepy. You know, don't go near him again, you know, or don't let him lock you in again, or you know what I mean? Like, don't fall for that again, you silly girl. So it's just, you know, people have different approaches, I guess. And so that's the kind of culture I grew up with, where you know, we talked about it and there was no freaking out of any kind, you know.
Oh, yeah, because that already sounds like somebody would be jailed for, you know, shooting the guy, and there'd be some story about somebody's cousin doing something or some, you know, unrelated incident where guy's car blew up. I mean, it's so I really like that when I read the synopsis, because even for a second, I'll admit, I stopped reading when it said he touches a young boy in a bathroom. And so now that we're getting to talk about this openly, I'm seeing where, you know, how is it that I was even conditioned, and I've been to college and I've traveled most of the country and I have friends from every part of the world and I'm very open and liberal. But it was just even seeing that sentence made me think, you know, well, this is weird, you know, and this is creepy. And why does she want to talk about this? So now that we're actually getting to talk about it and really understand that there's almost kind of a let's talk about it because we don't, maybe, where you kind of like inspired to be like, can I find something that we're not talking about and talk about it?
Yeah, I guess so. I think that is the goal, and I'm not giving away the sort of the big reveal in the movie, which is
reasoning.
Which is, you know, beyond just cultural, but there's, I think, you know, ultimately I try to make films where you really don't know where, what a person's background is. And I guess, my goal with it is just to have a little bit of compassion and look beyond the labels, even if it is, you know, even if it is something as terrible as sex offender or child molester, because, you know, I just think that's compassion, right? To understand where the other person's coming from.
Right. Well, that's what I think so few, it's the most overused example, but it's the easiest to use for people to relate is, we won't really spend more than like 30 seconds mentioning it, but it's like Goodfellas, you know, everybody loves that film.
Right.
And you kind of forget for 2 hours that you're like, you know, going along and rooting for the people that are just stealing and murdering and, and, you know, dealing coke and killing to get their $50 back over a horse race. And then kind of it goes off and you go back to your life, and then you don't really consciously stop and think, God, I was just rooting for a coke dealer, you know, where if your neighbor was a coke dealer, you'd be calling the cops and you'd be, but you're like, right. It's cool because it has music and the editing's great and it's like a well-made movie. So I think it's great. I think it's important anytime a movie talks about something that is not being talked about or looks at any issue. I'm constantly frustrated. That's why I wanted to have a show that wasn't censored, because I'm not going to have a show where we pretend that things don't exist or pretend that certain movies don't exist. I'm always interested in the work of a director and a cinematographer. Do you feel it's like a 50-50 thing? Do you think there should be a thing where it's like, okay, I know a lot about flags and what grips are supposed to do, but this is where I just kind of stay out of it? Or do you feel it's just like, okay, I got the medium frame I want, so now I'm just going to let the cinematographer do her thing?
I think it's different for every project and depending on your relationship and the amount of time you have to prepare, I guess. But no, I mean, I like to have a shot list, a general shot list. I also like to have the room to deviate from that shot list. But, I'll bring my visual ideas to the table beforehand for the cinematographer. And obviously with the feature, like with Stefan, we had a lot more time to talk about the overall look of the film. And so Stefan Chupik is the cinematographer. He's Berlin based. And, it was his second feature posthumous. And before that he worked for 10 years, Anthony.Mantle, and he worked on, you know, 127 Hours and Slumdog Millionaire and all these other films. And
oh, wow.
So he...
Sorry, 127 Hours freak. Sorry about that.
I think he's like shot Second Unit or he... Anyway, so he's tremendous, but he hadn't done a lot of his own features. So he ended up... shooting with this with me, and we watch a lot of films together. Whereas with Ava, we didn't have a lot of time to watch films. And also I was more inspired by photography for Touch. And so I had sent her a lot of the photographers that inspired me and those images. So yeah, I think it's a different process with every one of them, but I enjoyed working with both of them.
Well, since you had mentioned Posthumous, we might as well mention that. Is there a way that is there a way out there that people can see it? I mean, is it on Netflix or streaming somewhere? Or
no, we're still in the festival circuit with it. We played at Miami this year, Miami International, and IFF Boston, and we also are playing this month at the Niagara Integrated Film Festival, which is a new film festival in Canada. It was founded by Bill Marshall, who is also the founder of Toronto International Film Festival. And so, yeah, we're excited to screen there because it's this sort of like it's in a vineyard and it celebrates films along with food and wine. And so, you know, can't go wrong there. And
yeah, well, I was going to say, the one thing Canadians know how to do is drink. I went to film school there, so they know their artistry and they know their beer and wine. So.
Yeah,
I say that with all the love in my heart. But since you're on that festival circuit, I mean, this must be amazing. I mean, I'll do a quick log line on this, but to have, I've never actually met a filmmaker with two films on the circuit at once. I already know that one is bananas enough, whether it's a short, a feature. It's even hard work if it's not doing well. So if it's doing well, the work is only 10 times more hard. Posthumous, after a struggling artist fakes his own death to gain attention, he fails for a resourceful reporter trying to expose him, and both begin to see the possibility and value of a new perspective on life. Now this, I'm sorry, but first of all, I just got to know, what is it like to have a feature and a short on the festival circuit? I mean, for a filmmaker, the work, the keeping track of things, I mean, what is that?
Well, it's definitely been a lot of work. I mean, I don't know anything different. These are my first two films, so I guess I've just put everything into both of them, and yeah, I do what I have to do. But I also, you know, try to really stay focused on the next project, because I think that it can be easy to get caught up with the festivals and the meetings and just whatever else comes with promoting the film that, you know, but the question that people want to know usually on the festival circuit is subconscious part of me keeps wanting to say circus instead of circuit, but, and maybe because, you know, it's hectic like a circus, right? But I just try to really find time to keep working on my next feature, which I'm trying to get off the ground now and not lose too much time. But it's great. It's been great to, they're two very, very, very different films. And I did that intentionally because, you know, I'm still a new young artist and I'm still trying to find my voice. And Posthumous is, an homage to the screwball comedies that I love because, you know, when I was in, even when I was young in China or when I came to America, a lot of stuff we would watch would be like Singing in the Rain, and we would watch, you know, Roman Holiday, and we watch all these Cary Grant, Catherine Hepburn films at my grandmother's house because I think she had, like in China over the summers when I would go visit, she would have nothing, but she would have AMC. And so,
right away.
You know, so I was really, and I would just, you almost don't need language, you know, and like, even if my English wasn't up to par and I would watch it, I could totally follow what was going on. And so this was, pays tribute to those types of films and Preston Sturges and Billy Wilder and Woody Allen. So, and then Touch is obviously you know, a much darker issue film. And I directed that in two languages. It's in Mandarin Chinese as well as English. And so dealing with subtitles and everything like that and making sure to, you know, and that's a whole nother thing is like subtitles, how you translate. It's so specific because there's certain words in Chinese that are not, that don't exist in English, and trying to find the equivalent, but without being too lengthy. Or so that was the whole thing I could go on and on about. But yeah. So, I mean, I don't know if that answers your question, but it's been really fun.
I know it does. I'm most happy that you mentioned screwball comedies, because our exact platform for doing this podcast was to give as much time as we could discussing with, you know, what new films are out there and what's coming out. And, you know, every guest that comes on, we extend to them to come back in the future to talk about their next film. And we always want to keep an open dialogue and keep a filmmaker feeling like this is a place where they can come back and they don't have to have a canned speech of what they say. And so, but we also always want to kind of find a way where we get into what influences the artists. And we hope that they bring up stuff like Billy Wilder, you know, Some Like It Hot, or The Apartment.
Philadelphia Story was a, I mean, the two big influences for Posthumous was the Philadelphia Story and His Girl Friday and Sullivan's Travels. You know, which is really like Sullivan's Travels. I love that because it's, you know, there's comedy, but it's really about something. It's really about this man searching for his own, you know, voice. And he's trying to make important films and important dramas. Right. And ultimately what he discovers on his journey with, and Veronica Lake is so great in it. What he ultimately discovers is that comedy, you know, is what the people are watching, right? He goes out in search of like the poor so that he can make these important dramas, but the poor people are watching the comedies that the silly comedies that he makes, and because it gives them a little bit of lightness at the end of their day. And so I drew a lot from that type of tone because I am kind of making fun of myself and other artists in general. And what we do is that we take ourselves so seriously, and we think, you know, what we do is so important, and it is art, of course, is vital. But at the same time, you know, we poke fun of that a little bit. And that's why we poke fun at the cliched artist, which is Jack Huston's character, Liam Price, you know, is that, you know, he would die for his work. And then in a way he does in order to get the recognition. And he ultimately discovers that's not what's important. Right.
I love that you mentioned Sullivan's Travels, because that, for anyone that you don't know or haven't seen that film, it comes on TCM fairly often. You have to watch that movie.
That's what it is. It must be TCM was what my grandmother had in China. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, well, you know, AMC used to be a really great classic movie channel in the late 90s. And that was what I used to watch before TCM got so popular. And then AMC kind of sold out. There used to be no commercials. And then they started having their own TV shows. And they started showing newer movies. But there used to be both. Just TCM, of course, has now knocked them out of the market. But Sullivan's Travels is, you know, this filmmaker who wants to go out into the world. And in some ways, it does speak subversively and subtextually to filmmakers. Don't go out there sometimes and just experience the world. They think to make their next film, they need to get a pile of movies and two books and then, you know, have conversations with three old friends. And that's going to jumpstart something. As to where it might be more inspiring just to go for a bus ride to somewhere you've never been, or go sit in a cafe you've never sat in. And again, like you're saying, those are moments that artists can sometimes put too much seriousness into. A movie that I love of Woody Allen's is like Stardust Memories, director that goes to a festival and everyone thinks that you know what your next movie is going to be. And everyone thinks that you just like pull your next hit out of your back pocket. And that kind of way that he, I mean, I know everyone takes from The Derivative of Truffaut's Day for Night. I know that was like, you know, opening up the movies about filmmakers, but I think that was real. I think that's a really interesting thing. I can't wait till this, however this comes out. Please let us know our show, or please let me know. I would love to see this film. This sounds really great. If you could just say one more time, since it's out there, that we can let people know now that we've discussed it, where it's still going to be playing.
It's going to be playing at Niagara Integrated Film Festival later this month. And you can also find the trailer online. So it's called Posthumous. The trailer's on YouTube. And you can also follow us on Facebook as we're talking to U.S. distributors and such now. And the movie's actually already come out in a lot of the international territories. It came out in Germany, where we shot it, and it came out in Turkey, and I believe it came out in Switzerland, and I think it's coming out soon in Australia. So, you know, I don't know how far-reaching this podcast is, but if you're in any of those places, you know, you can stay tuned and follow us on Facebook. Again, it's facebook.com/posthumousmovie.
Well, you just mentioned four countries where I have friends that actually listen to episodes occasionally. My friends from Germany now live in Turkey, and one of my good friends is in Switzerland, and I have friends in Australia. So we've just now gotten the show getting listened to again. As filmmakers, we can pass off international territories, as our film school buddies listen, but it's still more audience, and it's them telling their friends, like, everything. We all know that. But that's fantastic. I see, that's what I love about this. I can now get off here, email my friend in Turkey and tell him about this movie. And he's the kind of guy that comes at movies where he only watches, movies only a few times a year. So to him, a movie is like the Super Bowl or the World Series.
Yeah.
It's like he's like, I'm sitting down for something, and it's just this, as the guy said, is from East Berlin. So he just sees that in a very, you know, we could go real philosophical on seeing it as just, you could be doing 2 hours of something different with your life just because he comes from a place where you couldn't go to the movies. So he sees it as like a big honor. You know, I took him to the movies here and he stopped me at the door and he was like, every time you come here, do you realize what a great freedom this is? That you can just come here every week, every day. You can come here at 11, 2, 4, 7, 9, and no one's stopping you. No one's asking you what you're going to see. No one's asking you where you've been, why you're here. And it kind of floored me. And I thought, wow, that was really amazing. So it's cool now that I can tell him about this film and tell him to keep an eye out for it, because he loves to hear about stuff that's from other cultures and other parts of the world that, again, you know, when you grow up on the other side of the East Berlin Wall, you think you're never going to see 2 miles away.
Yeah.
So to hear stories from New York or L.A., that is like hearing something from Mars. So that's pretty cool.
It's funny because my cinematographer also is from East Germany, and he escaped through Poland before the wall came down, and it took him and his mother 3 years, and they had to like hide away in Poland, and then they finally made it to West Berlin, and a couple months later the wall came down. I just find it a really funny story, because he's like, on one hand he was really happy that the wall came down, but on the other hand, you know, because they had this like really intense journey of escaping and getting to West Germany, that as soon as he gets there, then the wall comes down and everybody just, you know, can walk over. So, but yeah.
Right. Growing up as a child, Americans, we were really shown was those iconic images of it coming down. And I think I was like 6 or 7. So I, of course, had no context or understanding, and then it kind of hits you later. But that is kind of an amazing, you know, I've always found something too in all my friends that I meet from Europe, they'll tell me these stories that are just something as simple as like they went to the beach, and just their day at the beach would make this short film that would just play like 50 festivals, but like, they're not filmmakers and they're not interested in like writing it down, but it's just like all that happened to you in like an hour. And I think there's also that, that when we're talking about films and different cultures and things in America, is the openness that there is with the, you know, just a little bit back in what you're saying in touch, the openness to not being so always constantly watching what you're going to say or do. So that right. good things right. come with having that openness.
Are you referring to like political correctness?
Some of that, but part of it is mixed with, you know, when we go out sometimes in a day in America, we have to, you know, when we're in a store, we can't be telling, like you said, sex. We can't be telling a story about something that happened between us and a woman. We have to be seen if a child hears. And so we kind of have this closed offness when we go out in our day. We go out to the store. We watch how we're dressed. Instead of when you go out sometimes and you just really don't care what's going to happen, some of the most fun right. stuff happens. And that idea of just being open to the world.
Yeah, like overprotectiveness and I think judgment, you know. And I think there's a million stories in America as well. It's just all about perspective, you know, and
right,
about.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we have really appreciated you stopping by to talk with us today. And we hope if we have the chance, we never expect it from a filmmaker. We hope that we could have the chance to meet you briefly at Palm Springs. If our schedules match or you have a moment, we're going to be around the festival and just kind of keeping our antennas out. And of course we have your film on our, actually, we didn't mention that over the air. What is your day and time that you're showing?
We are screening on June 19th, which is Friday, and it's part of the All in the Family program, and we'll be screening at Camelot Theaters at 2 p.m. So Friday, June 19th at 2 p.m.
Okay, and that's the Camelot Theaters.
Yep.
Yeah, because this festival is so big, and we've went through some of the media materials. You always know a festival is going to be big when they don't give you a lot of media materials to start out. You're kind of like, oh, okay, the wave's going to come 2 days before the festival. So it's like, you know, get ready for your schedule to just be, who knows. Okay,
right.
So that's Friday the 19th, 2 p.m., Camelot Theaters, Palm Springs. Will you be doing a Q&A or any panels or anything?
I'm sure, I believe so, but I don't know the exact ones yet because they haven't scheduled them yet. But
okay.
I can email you if you want to announce it on another show or if you plan to be there and want to come.
Definitely. I would love that because we want to, we didn't get the okay. Palm Springs said they're just too busy to do some shows kind of like broadcasting from the lobby or kind of just walking around with the mic and talking to people. But we are going to be doing a post show and a wrap. And we definitely are going to hopefully attend some panels and would love to be able to get some interviews for that or some, maybe even possibly not a panel on the show, but a couple of filmmakers that were there that would want to come on and talk about the festival and let the audience hear about it firsthand from them. That's the thing we're yet to do. We're yet to have a episode where we have filmmakers after a festival. We've had a bunch where it's before they're showing but we haven't gotten to hear that kind of like, what was it like last night? How did it go? You know, so we're looking to maybe do something like that, even if it's just like 3 minutes of, you know, call in and give us a blurb. So, but we thank you for that. And, you know, you have my email, feel free to send us that information anytime. And also if there's anything that you need, you know, promoted or mentioned, feel free to let me know. I can always just throw it over the air. We do that for filmmakers. And again, for everyone who just joined in, please go back to the earlier in the archive. We just had an episode with film director Lulu Wang. She discussed her films Touch and Posthumous, actually both currently on the festival circuit right now. And what I always want to do at the end of each show, Lulu, is I want to give the filmmaker, and you don't have to use the whole time if you don't want, but I like to just turn over the floor to them for a few minutes. If there's anything they'd like to say or promote, mention, that could kind of just close off their episode in the way they'd like it closed.
Well, I will promote something that's a little bit you know, I think untraditional. And this is a general correction. My last name is Wong, not Wang, and it's a very common mistake, but actually in Chinese, there is no Wang. The last name Wang does not exist. It is always pronounced Wong, whether it's spelled with an A or an O. And yeah, so like Vera, Alexander, they should all, you know, correct the American pronunciation. So I go by Luke.
Oh,
Wong.
My gosh,
yeah.
I feel so bad. I'm so sorry. I had no
clue.
No,
don't feel bad. Don't feel bad. I'm not doing it to make anyone feel bad. It's such a common last name, and it's commonly mispronounced. And, you know, I think that most people with the last name have just allowed it to be, you know, said as Wang. I mean, Vera Wang, Alexander, like I said. And so it's a very, very common error. But because my father goes by Wong, I've just decided, you know, to make the correction whenever there's an opportunity to educate. Because really, it's about, you know, I think part of with touch and less so with posthumous, but in general, with my life, you know, that it's diversity in my diverse background, it's just about, you know, knowledge. And it's about sort of educating each other, because, you know, how do we know not to make those mistakes unless we know the accurate thing, right? So.
Oh, right. No, I love that. I totally
so
love that.
So that's it,
yeah.
You know.
So I'm going to actually like email a couple of friends and tell them that so a few more people know. I mean, that's really, I would have no clue. I would have gone on for another how many years not knowing. So
yeah, absolutely.
We appreciate that.
Slowly but surely we start here, right? And so yeah, but otherwise go check out, you know, follow me. I'm Thumbalulu everywhere, online, on Facebook. Thumbalulu, Thumbelulu. Comes from Thumbelina. My friend nicknamed me that when I was in high school, and it kind of stuck. And so that is my handle on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, everything. So, and my website.
Excellent. Well, please, everyone, do that. Follow our filmmakers, support them. We can definitely know when a filmmaker appreciates their audience. You can tell in their work. You can actually tell in their voice. I can tell in the first 3 minutes of a show if a filmmaker appreciates their audience. Lulu definitely does. So please support her work. Follow her on Facebook. I'm going to go ahead and do my maintenance wrap, but thank you again for joining us today, and hopefully see you at Palm Springs or talk to you in the near future.
Sounds good. Thanks, Paul.
Have a great day.
Yeah.
And we thank so much Lulu Wong. Again, like I said, like she said, her name is spelled Lulu Wang, and Lulu Wong is how it's pronounced. So if as she mentioned, if any time we can start anywhere with educating people on stuff, especially culturally, that's another big component of filmmaking, artistry, life. I, as always, am thankful that you joined us today. I'm thankful to the guests, to the production team, and thank you so much. Have a great day, and as always, make sure and watch a great movie. Aloha.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Pictures Podcast, real conversation and movie-induced inspiration.